Welcome to Fuel, a NAVC podcast for propelling your leadership journey. I'm Joe Mahalik, the Propel Leadership Development Program Manager. Each month, we will be engaging thought leaders who will tell their stories. You'll hear about workplace issues like culture, psychological safety, intentionality, and transformational leadership. So, whether you're interested in learning what leading is all about, or you've been a leader for years, we are all on an ongoing professional journey, which requires fuel. This episode of Fuel, we'll hear from three NAVC leaders who went through the trenches together of earning a doctorate's degree, Dr. Sandy Zare, Dr. Kyle Warner, and Dr. Angie Lewis. Each of them will share how their individual journeys came together under one purpose, and how that experience carries over to each of us, bringing together our unique story, forming one NAVC.
I want to thank the three of you for being here today. This is kind of a unique special, if you will, when it comes to the podcast, since we normally just have a one-on-one conversation. And I've invited the three of you together because you have a very unique and interesting story, personally and professionally. And I think it's really going to be valuable for our audience to hear a little bit about that. So before we get started, do you mind going around and introducing yourselves? Tell us who you are and kind of what you do for the organization.
Sure. I'm Sandy Zare. I'm currently working in a new strategic positioning strategy here at Crane called Mission Integration for Distributed Operations. We just call it MIDO because we like acronyms.
Yes, hello. My name is Kyle Warner, and I serve as our Deputy Technical Director here at NSWC Crane.
Hi, I'm Angie Lewis, Technical Director and 33-year employee at NSWC Crane.
Tell me a little bit about what made the three of you come together to focus on your doctorate programs as individuals towards a single goal.
I recall getting interested and talking to our technical director at the time, Dr. Adam Razavian, and he strongly encouraged me to go out and pursue it. So I went out and actually developed a spreadsheet of a lot of different doctoral opportunities. You guys both remember the spreadsheet, right? Mm-hmm. And shared it with Kyle, who was my department director at the time, and said, hey, looking at this, what do you think? And he said, I think I might be interested too. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's about how it went, right, Kyle?
Very much so. You know, and to build a little bit, we had been an organization that had been really intentional to target workforce with advanced degrees and had some success around that time with maybe, you know, 70 or 80 different PhDs. And we had discussion amongst our leadership team where, you know, it would be incumbent upon us to really have some leaders that were PhDs that might be able to relate a little better to those employees and have experienced that process. So it really piqued a curiosity, I think, amongst our executive team at the time that really was probably underpinned by some lifelong learning desires, I think, that each of us shared. And really, you know, Angie, that's where we pulled you into the dialogue, too, and said, what do you think?
Yeah, I can remember it was between Christmas and New Year's. There weren't many people around. And the way that I recall the spreadsheet come in and Kyle brought it in to show me what work you had done, Sandy, and what the two of you were getting ready to go embark upon. And having just had my own discussion with Dr. Razavian about the next stages of my own personal and professional development and encouraging me to be willing to take that next step that through that conversation, it wasn't too large of a leap for me to become interested. And the university that you were leaning to at the time, Sullivan, had multiple concentrations in this management PhD. And if I remember correctly, Sandy, you were looking at conflict resolution. Kyle was looking at strategy as a major concentration area, and they also offered a concentration in leadership and management and human resources management, I should say, leadership and human resources management. And it was a natural fit for me and really piqued my interest.
Yeah.
Was there a single point that was evident right off the bat, or was it just those kind of three general things, and then they developed and pointed to more of a focused energy for the three of you?
So I would say that was more at the decide to embark upon a program level of coming together that happened for the three of us. The university offered a cohort approach, so we were going to be able to have a majority of our classes together. Then we would have some divergence when it comes to our concentration-specific courses. Throughout that, those early stages, I think what happened is they lead you from the beginning to be thinking about your dissertation and how you're going to finish and finalize the program. And it was really through that dialogue and discussion that we started to look at our individual research interests and how they might converge.
Yeah, you know, what was crazy for me, Joe, is I looked around and I said, you know, I've got people, I work with people at Crane who get speeding tickets coming to work. They love coming to work at Crane. But I also work with others who stay in the shower till the hot water runs out because they don't want to come to work. They're just dragging themselves to work. I want to understand the difference between the two, and it's a concept I was exposed to early in my PhD work as employee engagement. And that's really what I got into and studied. And I think you both had kind of similar experiences. Early on, you said, gee, this is what I want to go look at, right?
So yours got refined to employee engagement from where you first started. What about the two of you?
Yeah, so I had kind of a similar experience as we were marshaling our way through the didactic portion of the program. We got exposed to a variety of different topics, and one of them that really had my interest piqued, along with what I was spending time on my day job, was around innovation and really a culture of innovation. There's a lot of literature out there that speaks to antecedents of innovation and their predictability of culture, but really, you know, self-assessing our environment, you know, how would we create an opportunity that would maximize the potential of innovation in our world and ultimately lead to the opportunity to accelerate the development of that technology and then ultimately put it into the hands of our warfighters. So I had a lot of interest around strategy and innovation, and that really kind of helped with the focus, I think, over the coursework that I was part of.
Yeah, so for me, I had exposure to academic research that looked to organizational outcomes and personal outcomes associated with participation in leadership development courses and programs. What I was interested in through this coursework and the research that we did was, what's the experience, the lived experience of the person who goes through one of these programs, and what about that experience is most impactful? And we knew that, you know, it would lead to organizational outcomes that were positive, higher levels of performance, maybe personal outcomes that were enhanced, higher salaries, higher promotion rates, those kinds of things. But I was really curious from a leadership perspective, what draws in the person and the experience that they have, and how does that impact their career journey?
So each of your individual passions, maybe on a surface level, didn't connect immediately, but as you went through and started working together, they kind of rolled up, didn't they? And they become something from what I understand.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the conversation that we had at one of our retreats with one of the faculty, when she helped us to see that that working together collectively, we might look at one element of Crane as an organization and look at it from these three different perspectives. Do you remember that?
I do. We immediately lit to, we have some guiding principles at Crane. One of those is all about our ethos. Mm-hmm. And our ethos, interestingly enough, is worded, I'm going to mess it up here, so let me try here, but it basically is to build a culture of innovation that values leadership and employee engagement. Mm-hmm. And so we looked at that and said, wow, we've got this ethos thing surrounded with Kyle on innovation and Angie on leadership and Sandy on employee engagement. So we always wanted to do something that was this Crane and Navy specific. And so this really, that was a turning point, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It was. And, you know, those guiding principles, those weren't by gosh or by golly, right? So
right.
Those were direct outcomes of our executive team working across our strategy capability to try to create context for positioning the place for long-term relevance. So with that ethos and the ties then to each of our areas, we just felt like that presented a real packaged opportunity to bring value to Crane in ways that we had aspire to, but it really became clear, I guess, once we had the tie to the ethos.
But you know what's interesting about that, Angie, was that until we had that conversation, we didn't make the connection that we'd really had this ethos guiding principle all figured out. And so I think there's a lesson there, right? That as you start to look at what you're doing in combination with other people, and once you peek your head up just a little bit and look around and realize you're in alignment to some things. We were in alignment, didn't fully appreciate and understand it. Now, we got to that point pretty quickly, but I think as NAVC employees, that happens a lot, right? We get so busy in our stovepipes that if we look around and realize we're connected to something bigger.
Absolutely. I think there's a great parallel to draw from that perspective. I have a passion for leadership development, the programs that we had in place at Crane, and was really interested in seeing some of the outcomes from an employee perspective. But certainly when you couple that with delivering innovation and technology into the hands of warfighters to enhance our mission responsibilities, and you couple it with the value that comes from an engaged employee who's choosing to give and deliver at 100 or 110% versus 50%, then certainly the sum of all of the parts, the whole is greater than the sum of all the parts individually.
Absolutely.
And I think there are a lot of parallels. We are required to work across organizational boundaries inside of the fence line in order to execute our work. We're a part of a larger NAVC one team set of warfare centers. We support the Secretary of the Navy as a part of the Navy's research and development establishment. We're not in any of our lines of business alone. Mm-hmm. It takes a team. It takes a lot of different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Recognizing that's so important, kind of going with what Sandy was talking about, that moment where you recognize that there was a unified approach that you could, or a unified goal that you could get to. If I'm a leader listening to this, how would you suggest people break through the, what I love to call silos of excellence? You know, I'm really good at what I do. I'm great at innovation, but I don't have time to think about employee engagement, or I don't have time to think about leadership, or whatever it may be across the organization.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm sure that I'll invite comments here as well. But I think that was a fundamental shift that the three of us experienced as a small group and a cohort, is that the real value and the power that can be brought to bear through collaboration and relationships. Just as Angie kind of gave a great account, the relationships and the breadth that we have in the mission that we perform is well beyond, the 3,800 civil servants that are here at NSWC Crane. And once you recognize the value and the importance that it can come from partnering across an organization where you can bring a collective capability to these complex and difficult challenges that we are shared with, there's tremendous value in that. And I guess the perspective I'd leave with is, that doesn't happen natural for a lot of us, right? We're trained to be good at our job. Many of us are technically educated. Many of us are introverted by nature. And the ability to pick our head up and to think broadly about those collaborative partnerships, it doesn't happen natural. So I would just encourage leaders out there to challenge themselves a little bit, to look for opportunities, to think a bit more broadly about the value of collaborative and strategic partnerships. Because at the end of the day, that's how we're successful addressing some of the most complex challenges. I don't know, Sandy, if that makes sense from your point of view, but it's certainly something I think we've shared.
Yeah, no, it does, Kyle. I got to tell you, I have never, ever asked a question from one of my peers across other warfare center divisions that they haven't given me a very genuine, fact-filled, great answer. The point is, it's a force multiplier, right, when we work across the organizations, mm-hmm. across the whole NAVC enterprise. And what I found is, yes, it's hard. It takes time, but in the end, it becomes more efficient because I get some perspective. I learn how to do something perhaps a little differently, gain a viewpoint that I didn't have before. And frankly, that helps me become more efficient and saves me time in the long run. So I would just encourage people to invest time to have those conversations, to collaborate across the Warfare Center enterprise, across the NAVC enterprise. We're doing wartime readiness drills right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important to understand how are other people doing it. Sharing that perspective across is so valuable.
I was thinking about how structured the school was in bringing us together, even though the preponderance of the program was remote. There were required times that we come together with other students and with faculty, and it was in those environments that they created settings and discussion topics that led us to this place to have that conversation with Marilyn Falkenberg while we were down there. And so, you know, when you bring that back into our environment, you talked about asking your peers. I was thinking through of my time in the corporate operations role and all of the great work of the communities of practice across the 10 NAVC warfare centers. And without the face-to-face meetings, the teams, regular drumbeat, the emphasis that is put on standard process and leveraging best practices, I'm not sure that those things do happen well enough naturally. And so it was a great illustration of things that I see NAVC working on every day, trying to bring the enterprise to be operating at a more efficient, effective level by leveraging the goodness that exists across. And this is the concept behind Get Real, Get Better as well. Mm-hmm. We've heard multiple times that they're trying to level set and raise the bar of performance across the entire Navy. And so that's a little bit of the experience that we had.
You mentioned the word community. What's communities of practice, and really what they did at our organization, Sullivan, was created a community. And I think that's a good piece of leadership advice is to intentionally create a community, right? Create a community of people with whom you can collaborate and work. Communities of practice are valuable. There's gold there.
So intentionally putting together a structure where you can have organized, organic discussion is kind of what I'm taking from that. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go back to what you were talking about, Angie, just a moment ago, because earlier we had a conversation about values and about behavior. Kind of between you and Kyle, you're talking about what's natural and what's not natural. So we can have our values, but we don't always behave after our own values. What kind of advice might you give that will break through some of that difficulty shifting and adhering our behavior to our values?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's not an easy thing. I remember talking with a former commanding officer here, and we went to a training class that was scenario driven with leaders and managers across the organization. We presented scenarios. We allowed them to talk with us about how they would respond and react in small groups. And then once they did that, we had the functional leads from HR and EEO and the Office of Counsel. They're prepared to give them insight to maybe better ways of responding than not good ways. As we came back, he said, "That all just seems like common sense to me." We had a conversation then about common sense is not always common practice. And you have to create environments where there's safety in being able to practice, because we're faced with tough situations. The employees here are faced with tough situations daily. Leaders across the organization trying to deliver innovative outcomes and incentivize employee engagement. And how do we ensure that given the opportunity presented with a chance to shine, do our behaviors line up with what we aspire to through those values and our guiding principles? And so it was a great moment for me and for him to have a conversation about that's why we go and we practice and we have these conversations.
And you have people who will tell you when you're not acting in congruence, as our friend Tomas from Corona would say, when your audio and video don't match. Mm-hmm. He talks about that. That really resonates with me, but that's so important, right? Congruence between our deeds and our words. And so having a close cadre of people who will let you know, hey, listen, you're a little out of congruence here. Your actions don't quite meet the video doesn't quite meet the audio. That's important, right? And so having that piece, not only practicing, but having people be able to help you see what you may not see yourself is important.
You know, I chuckle there just a little bit because the term fearless feedback comes to mind. That's something that we have shared regularly. And you know, when you do experience that incongruence, you may not realize it as an individual, right? But if you've got, teammates that have the opportunity to share that in a manner that can help broaden your perspective, that's when you know you're in a good position. And those relationships, shared experience and shared understanding when you get a group that goes through a process or gets exposure to something and has that shared experience, it's just so impactful for people to be able to self-relate and actualize and create relational capital. And if we're thinking about an audience that is on the verge of seeking to maybe understand some of this content in the way that these relationships matter, I would just submit that that's an important piece of it, too, to understand the ability to have that shared relationship and shared understanding, because it can create foundations for great opportunities to get some feedback in a very impactful way.
The environment you're discussing there, and maybe you experienced this, the three of you, as you were working through this extremely difficult task to earn a doctorate's degree in a remote environment when things were kind of crazy at work. There's a term called communitas, which essentially means the community you form when you're in a foxhole, when you're fighting a fight together. And you kind of learn to let go of the things that might have seemed important when you were back home, but now that you're in the foxhole fighting together, you form a strength of community. Can you describe the transition from the unique individuals that the three of you are into that communitas, and maybe how you can encourage others who are going through something like that to get to that a little quicker, maybe?
So I was ready to quit 5 weeks into the PhD program. I appreciate the fact that these two guys pulled me back in and said it gave me a whole new perspective, said it's not that bad. Come on, we'll get through it together. So there was something about it that truly, I think you mentioned earlier, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, Angie, and that is so true in this case, where these two guys helped me. All of us kind of went through our moment. We all had a moment. You just do.
Or more than one.
Yeah, you just do. I recall sitting in a lounge in a hotel in D.C. working on statistics problems, the three of us, one time we were on a trip. So those kinds of things develop a sense of community. But I found myself, first of all, I had to become more vulnerable than I'm not used to being vulnerable. And I'm not good at that. And with these guys, I had to be vulnerable and say, hey, guys, I'm just not getting it, or I don't understand it, or I don't know if I can do this. And at any given time, I think they both did the same thing with me. And so that bond developed, that bond is still there today. I feel very much like the two of these guys understand me. They get me as well as anybody and will have my back.
When you go through something as challenging as this program was for us, individually, we're all somewhat driven performers with some level of competence and bring something to the table. Truly, I felt like this challenge was one that I would not have been able to meet individually. And I think maybe that's what Sandy's talking about when he says, I was ready to quit 5 weeks in, but we all had our moments. This was something that required us to be dependent on one another at different times, and that allowed us to leverage our strengths. There were some tasks that you had to perform sort of jointly or as a team or as a part of this cohort, and we were able to leverage one another's strengths to where maybe something I contributed would have been overly burdensome on one or the other of them, and certainly they rose to the lead position at times through the program, depending on the task. And so I think there's a lot of parallels between that experience that we had through this very challenging program and what sometimes teams in the workplace deal with. And so we had mechanisms to stay connected. We had a chat group, you know, a text group. We offered encouragement to one another. We tried to remember when one or the other had something significant going on in their personal life and offer them support to go and have some balance for that time and to help to, you know, ease the burden for them. You know, Sandy mentioned getting together on travel to work on homework assignments. We would have to seek places for connectivity here on the installation when that wasn't as strong as it is today. And I can remember going in to the basement down at the NGIS when it was still here, because that was a place where we could find a hotspot to get something accomplished when it had to be done. I know personally that the bonds formed by going through something difficult like we did, they are very strong for sure. And it makes you appreciative of not having to always be the strongest in every component of some you know, major task facing a group. So,
without any question, it has been the most significant professional challenge that I've been exposed to in my career. The 3 years of duration to work, you know, through that process in a way that we maintained full-time commitments at the workplace as well. And I'm almost careful to say that because any of our audience members, if you're an aspiring PhD student, please give it thoughtful attention and do it. You know, you will be glad that you did. But, you know, one of the things as I listened to both of you share those comments, I think that really helped us was the clarity in the goal, right? So the way in which the program was laid out with the didactic portion complemented with the dissertation at the end leading up to the defense and confirmation of the degree, we knew where we were headed. And that having that strategic clarity for teams and the purpose and expected outcome and those process steps or milestones or goals that you're working toward, taking the time up front to really scope and define that well before you just go off and work really hard is such an important piece. And as I think about our shared success, that was a big piece of it, I believe. And then just the enormous range of care and emotions. We heard support and vulnerability. There was a lot of patience and grace. It was a different set of exposure of a feeling aspect that you would often traditionally find in a workplace that is a Navy laboratory environment. So I think just recognizing the value in creating those types of relationships over time, you know, we've joked that it's almost like a family kind of a bond relationship in a sibling kind of a manner. But the depth of that shared experience and then the strategic clarity of where you're headed, I think is an important piece of the success story behind it as well.
So you just said the strategic clarity of where we're headed. And I think we're all pretty aware of the way that things are going in the world scene and that there is a call for that clarity and really a unified effort. So as I think about the 10 divisions of the warfare centers and I think about the different aspects of NAVC, whether it's the shipyards or the RMCs or the PEOs, what wisdom can your experience shed to us unifying behind wartime readiness?
Yeah, so as we think about that environment and putting ourselves in a position to be successful in that environment, strategic clarity plays a big role, right? So as we think about goals of, you know, X to Y by when, having the clarity to understand how we're going to be able to look in the rear view at a later point in time to say, yes, we did achieve these objectives and we accomplished the goals with very intentional and deliberate process steps. That becomes a big piece of it in terms of having that understanding to be able to define up front.
I want to kind of circle back to the content of our work. You know, it converged around ethos as a guiding principle for how we lead here at NSWC Crane. Your question, you know, really gets to the heart of what I think was most valuable about what we did. It is not by accident. There's academic research that supports how to have successful outcomes in an environment such as ours. You know, we do very difficult work, cutting edge technology development, test and evaluation, fielding of combat systems. We're really underpinning national defense out of these NAVC Warfare Center laboratories. It does take a talented science and engineering workforce to be able to do that and great partnerships. But what we did through our program was really dove in and uncovered some of the underpinnings of how you do that. A world-class workforce deserves world-class management, and our research supports some world-class management techniques that are successful, that have proven outcomes and results that we're all very proud of here at NSWC Crane. And so I just wanted to kind of circle back to a technical director, Dr. Razavian, encouraging the workforce to continue their development and their journey has had multiple benefits in a lot of ways and a lot of layers. So we all had some personal accomplishment, professional association of the content back to our work, and organizationally for Crane, a set of research outcomes that really contribute to an understanding of how to manage in tough environments and deliver great outcomes.
I think about, when I think about wartime readiness, it goes back a little bit to our collective research, and it's that culture piece. And so we have to create this culture where when people see something, they say something. We need the people who are closest. We need everybody to contribute those innovative, game-changing ideas. And so the point is, we need to create a culture in which people feel safe and comfortable in sharing. Here's what I see, and here's how we can do better with wartime readiness. This takes all of us. It's a big project, and we're talking about big things, and they can't be solved from the corner office, right? They have to be solved by the entire organization pulling together. And so that culture that encourages that is going to be so critical, I think, moving forward.
Leadership development is one of the main reasons that we even had this podcast. You chose to invest in your own development, and that was a pretty impactful thing because you were on your own journey as individuals, and that journey came together, and we became a more powerful organization because of your choices. So I want to thank you for doing that, and I want to thank you for spending time with us today.
This was a great experience, Joe. Thanks for asking and putting it together. It's been a few years now, almost five, yeah, since we finished, and it's one of those, in the heat of it, it felt massively large and overly complex. And in retrospect, Kyle's absolutely right. If you're contemplating a journey such as this, it is well worth the investment of the time and the resources to do it. And you can do it. Just surround yourself with the right type of support system for sure.
I'll just comment in closing that in the event any of the comments piqued interest from any of the audience members, we'd be happy to have follow-up or exchange. We all are pretty active in coaching and supporting folks, and be happy to do that if there was something that was of interest here.
And I would just say, Joe, I want to thank you as a Propel program manager. That's such an important piece of this leadership development that we're doing and so critical. And I would encourage folks to better understand that as well. We're all believers in leadership development. We developed on our own, and we've tried to develop individuals and employees as well. We just firmly believe in that. And so I think the role you're playing in the NAFC organization to build leadership is a critical one, and I just want to encourage you to keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks again.
Thank you for joining this episode of the Fuel Podcast, brought to you by NAFC's Propel Leadership Development Program. For more information about Propel, visit the Propel Wiki page. Thanks for adding fuel to propel your journey.